The headlines. Tehran announces the start of a process to release billions of dollars of Iranian assets blocked by the U.S. in South Korea. Syrian media say an army bus has come under a terrorist attack in Deir al-Zour province. 55 people are confirmed dead in Hawaii wildfires, which officials say are the biggest natural disaster in the state's history. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour, Iran's foreign minister has announced the start of a process to unblock the country's assets that were frozen in South Korea due to U.S. sanctions.
The process for releasing several billion dollars of the Islamic Republic of Iran's assets, which had been illegally frozen in South Korea by the United States for several years, has started. Iran has received necessary guarantees that the U.S. will abide by its commitments in this regard.
The ministry's statement said Iran will use the released funds to meet the country's needs. It added that a number of Iranians who have been detained in the U.S. on baseless accusations will also be released soon. The ministry said several American prisoners in Iran whose freedom was sought by Washington are still in Tehran. Earlier, Iran's mission at the United Nations had confirmed that five American inmates in Tehran's Evin prison have been released to house arrest in preparation for a prisoner swap between the two countries. The U.S. has welcomed that, but says that it will keep up sanctions against Iran.
First, it's a positive step that they were released from prison and sent to home detention. But this is just the beginning of a process that I hope and expect will lead to their return home to the United States. In any event, in any respect, Iran will not be receiving any sanctions relief. And in any instance where we would engage in such efforts to bring Americans home from Iran, Iran's own funds would be used and transferred to restricted accounts such that the monies can only be used for humanitarian purposes, which, as you know, is permitted under our sanctions. There's an exemption for humanitarian that's there from the start. We will continue to enforce all of our sanctions.
The American prisoners will remain in Iran until Iranian assets are fully transferred to Tehran. That's according to Iran's Vice President for Political Affairs, Mohammad Jamshidi. He's also said the Iranians, in his words, held hostage by the U.S. should also be freed. The Islamic Republic has in the past rejected U.S. claims of sanctions exemptions for humanitarian purposes. Iran says the sanctions are inhumane and illegal and has directly affected its people's lives. The 15th Iran-South Africa Joint Economic Commission has wrapped up with 26 cooperation agreements being worked out. In the meeting, the two delegations also shared views on important bilateral and international issues. Gisumi Shamedi has the details.
The 15th Iran-South Africa Joint Commission in Pretoria has wrapped up with 26 cooperation agreements drafted and waiting to be finalized when Iran's president travels to South Africa later in autumn. Another sign of growing ties between the two countries that already enjoy close relations and have always supported each other during hard times.
One of the duties of Iran-South Africa Joint Commission is to come up with solutions to help establish peace and prosperity for nations in Africa and Asia. Moreover, we have high hopes for the outcome and achievements of this commission meeting in enhancing bilateral relations.
The Joint Economic Commission has proven to be more than just that, with shared views on international developments, which confirm Iran's foreign minister's comments when he said great steps have been taken to consolidate relations in various areas. But considering the geopolitical position of the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Republic of South Africa, with Iran eyeing a BRICS membership, it seems that the commonalities might lead to stronger relations than what it's been defined by the Joint Commission. Ties that may transcend the realms of bilateral cooperation in a world where more and more countries have expressed their frustration with Western hegemony and U.S. unilateralism.
Dear Minister, you know we are important members of what is termed the Global South. Both our countries are members of the Non-Aligned Movement. Our two nations support multilateralism and thus appreciate the role of the United Nations as the premier multilateral institution, while also advocating strongly for the reform of the United Nations, particularly the role and composition of the United Nations as Security Council.
With the Iranian president expected to pay two separate visits to South Africa, one to attend the BRICS Plus summit on August 24th and another to finalize the 26 cooperation agreements that were drafted by the 15 Joint Commission, prospects of a significant alliance are now stronger than ever. South Africa is considered an important country of the African continent, and the Islamic Republic of Iran has enjoyed warm relations with this country for decades. Now the Raisi administration wants these relations to go to the next level, achieving their full potential, all in line with a new multipolar world order that is emerging. Kisumisha Ahmadi, Pretoria.
A Syrian army bus has come under a terror attack in Deir al-Zour province east of the country. Syrian media citing a military source say the attack took place in a southeastern area of Deir al-Zour on Thursday. They say a number of soldiers were killed and injured without specifying. There has been no mention which terror group attacked the bus either. A war monitoring group has blamed it on the Daesh terror group. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says 23 soldiers lost their lives, 10 more were wounded. Daesh lost its last foothold in Syria in 2019 following fierce battles with the Syrian army and its allied resistance fighters. The group, however, maintains hideouts with remnants still active in some places. Journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas tells us about the U.S. agenda in Syria and its relationship with terrorists there.
The U.S. has bases in that territory for the prime purpose of carrying on destabilizing the west of Asia, to continue an effort to try and still hold out the hope that they can still take down Assad, or at least loot and rape resources from Syria as long as they can, because they are, of course, because these bases are not just there to attack Syrian people and to dominate the territory. They're also to loot oil, to take grain out of the country, and that's exactly what they're doing. So, to be honest with you, yes, there is a huge connection between the Americans. They fund them, they train them, they hide them. They also act as their intelligence and, logistics service to make sure that they're protected and they can be utilized as terror groups. And in this incident, you're just seeing just another example of that.
Humanitarian NGO, the Norwegian Refugee Council, has issued a report on the increasing violence by Israeli settlers against Palestinians. The group says the violence has caused many Palestinian communities to be wiped off the map in the occupied territories. That was the topic of our news review program. Let's listen to the comments made by our guests.
Starting off our news review segments, where we take a look at one of our stories in more detail. A human rights advocacy group says the increasing violence by Israeli settlers has caused the many Palestinian communities to be wiped off the map in the occupied territories. The Norwegian Refugee Council said in a report that around 500 Palestinians from seven communities this time have been forcibly displaced over the past 20 months. It's added that the rapid establishment of settlement outposts and takeover of Palestinian land is choking Palestinian communities, destroying their livelihoods and putting their lives at risk. The report revealed that Israeli settlers have attacked Palestinians nearly 600 times. In the occupied West Bank in the first half of this year alone, causing casualties and property damage. It warned that more and more Palestinian communities will be forcibly displaced if Israel is not held accountable. Joining us for more on this story is Jamal Wakim, a professor of international relations from the Lebanese University from Beirut. And we also have Tim Anderson, director at the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, joining us from Sydney. Gentlemen, welcome. Jamal, when you see Israeli settlers committing such heinous attacks and crimes against Palestinian women and children in the middle of the night, with Israeli occupation forces turning a blind eye to these atrocities, is that similar or worse than when the era of the Ku Klux Klan lynching black Americans in the middle of the night, with American authorities also looking on?
Well, you cannot compare. They can be matching each other in terms of atrocities, especially that the Israelis learned from the American racists their ways in handling and dealing with underprivileged and marginal groups in the United States. So these the Zionists have learned these ways and are implementing them against the Palestinian people in the occupied territories as a mean for them to cleanse the occupied territories from their population, from their people, and replace them with Zionist settlers and colonizers. This is something that has been ongoing for the past 140 years. It started in 1882, and it have dragged on all the way to the Nakba in 1948, when the Palestinians lost 80% of historical Palestine, and it continued with the 1967 occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, and it's dragging on all the way till our days. So there have been a systematic cleansing of the Palestinian people from their own land.
Tim, if you can share your thoughts on this topic. As Jamal was alluding to there, this ethnic cleansing campaign has been ongoing. It's widely documented. It's not just the Norwegian Refugee Council, but still, nevertheless, very alarming at the same time. Yet again, international silence towards the most brutal hegemonic policies on the planet.
Yes, Dr. Jamal's right when he talks about it being part of the ethnic cleansing that we've been observing for many, many decades. It's an atrocity at the level of the racial atrocities you mentioned in the US, but the purpose of it, of course, is ethnic cleansing. We know that from the creation of the Israeli regime, it was always desired by the leaders from Ben-Gurion onwards that they would have less than 20% of the inhabitants as Palestinian Arab people, and they've been aiming at eliminating towns and villages precisely with this end. And now, in the current day, if you look at the estimates, including from the Israeli officials, slightly more than half of the occupants of historic Palestine are Palestinian Arabs, and slightly less than half are Jewish Israelis. So there's this battle, which is, it's wrong to call it turning a blind eye or saying nothing about it. Really, the sponsors of these so-called settlers, even settlers not a very good word, they're colonists, they're violent colonists, they're armed, they burn Palestinian homes, Palestinian villages, they shoot them, they have weapons, they steal their land, and then they claim to be civilians when there's any sort of retaliation.
Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for your contribution. Let me thank our guests for their thoughts. Jamal Wakim is a professor of international relations joining us from Lebanon's University in Beirut. And Tim Anderson is the director at the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies joining us from Sydney. That brings an end to another edition of the News Review.
The death toll from massive wildfires and Hawaii keeps rising 4 days after the inferno engulfed the U.S. island state. 55 people have been confirmed dead so far in the fires, which officials have described as the biggest in Hawaii's history.
What we saw was likely the largest natural disaster in Hawaii state history. We are seeing loss of life here. As you know, the number has been rising, and we will continue to see loss of life. We also have seen many hundreds of homes destroyed. And that's going to take a great deal of time to recover from. But that's why we come together.
The deaths have been reported on Maui Island. 1,000 people also remain unaccounted for there. The seaside town of Lahaina is hit hard as well. Officials say 80% of the historic town is gone. They say it takes many years to rebuild the town, which was a major tourist hub. The wildfires have displaced thousands of people. Many more also remain without power. Firefighters are still battling the flames that were fueled by Hurricane Dora. President Joe Biden has issued a major disaster declaration. That means funds for recovery are released. Russia says that it has downed a Ukrainian drone over the capital, Moscow. According to the city's mayor, the drone debris caused no serious damage or injuries. The thwarted attack, however, disrupted air travel temporarily at Moscow's Vnukovo Airport. Late on Thursday, Russia destroyed two other drones as they were approaching the western city of Kursk. Local officials said they were Ukrainian drones. Kiev has increased drone attacks on Russian territory in recent weeks, mostly targeting Moscow. Russian response has conducted drone strikes, too, including on the capital, Kiev. Junior doctors in England are on strike again as their dispute with the government over pay drags on. The industrial action began on Friday, running for 4 days. We've talked to our correspondent in London, Said Puraza, about the strike, which is the fifth by junior doctors in the past months. He explains why they are walking out and how the action is impacting health services.
As far as the doctors, junior doctors are concerned, this is the fifth time since they first walked off the job in December last year. It is a deadlock dispute, no doubt, with both sides, junior doctors, VMA, and the government, saying that the channels of negotiations are open. We also understand that informal talks are underway with third-party adjudicators to try and resolve the issue. But neither of the two parties has agreed to go to the negotiating table formally. On the one hand, you have the government, as you said earlier, saying that there is no money. The final offer was that 6% with that more than £1,000 lump sum that would amount to 8.8% increase. Whereas the junior doctors are saying, as long as there's no parity or what they call pay restoration, they're not going to talk. They're not going to the negotiating table.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, we have started explanation of Surah Qalam, the number 68 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. Revealed in Mecca, it has 52 ayahs and opens with a single, discrete Arabic letter, Noon, and the divine oath by the instrument of Qalam, or the pen, as well as all knowledge that people are able to preserve and communicate thereby. It enumerates the noble characteristics of the Prophet of Islam and exhorts him to patience and steadfastness while rejecting the accusations of his foes who try to mock him as insane. It exposes the vices of the enemies of Islam, and referring to the inevitability of resurrection and final judgment, warns them of divine wrath. A statement from the Prophet speaks of divine rewards for those who recite Surah Qalam regularly, while the Prophet's sixth infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, says, recitation of this surah, whether in the obligatory or supererogatory ritual prayers, shall be immunity from the pressures of the grave for an observant Muslim. We continue from where we left you in our last episode, and here are ayahs 8 and 9.
فلا تطع المكذبين ودوا لو تدهن فيدهنون.
So do not hearken to the deniers, who are eager that you should be flexible so that they would be flexible with you, a flexibility that is deviation from the right path. If you might recall, in our last episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, we said, Allah Almighty warns the disbelievers of the consequences of calling the Prophet crazy and leveling unfounded accusations against his flawless character in a bid to dissuade people from listening to his message. But their plots went awry when more and more people were attracted to the teachings of Islam. As is clear by the ayahs that we recited to you now, the Almighty Creator cautions the Prophet, as well as all believers, against flexibility in the face of the plots of the deniers of Islam, whose intention is to force the truthful into a sort of compromise with their falsehood so that some divine commandments are set aside. In other words, since a compromise with the enemies of Islam helps the deniers to cling to their wicked ways and unlawful privileges, Allah has warned against the notion of compromise between truth and falsehood. The pagan Arab chiefs, alarmed at the spread of Islam,
made a desperate bid to prevent the people from accepting monotheism by offering concessions to the Prophet, who was cautioned by Allah against any flexibility with the liars. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, it is unwise to compromise with the deviated and corrupt elements whose intention is deceit. And number two, prophets are in constant communion with God Almighty, who are very well knows the plots of the deniers of truth. And number three, temptation and meaningless concessions are among the ways of the enemies to lull believers into inaction and deviation from the right path. Now let us listen to ayahs 10, 11, 12, and 13 of the same surah.
وَلَا تُطِعْ كُلَّ حَلَّافٍ مَهِينٍ هَمَّازٍ مَشَّاءٍ بِنَمِيمٍ مَنَّاعٍ لِلْخَيْرِ مُعْتَدٍ أَثِيمٍ
And do not believe any vile swearer, scandalmonger, tale-bearer, hinderer of all good, a sinful transgressor, callous and, on top of that, base-born. These ayahs are an apt description of some of the despicable characteristics of the enemies of Islam, especially of Walid ibn Mughira, a ringleader of the pagan Arabs of Mecca, who used to belie and slander Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Here, God Almighty makes depiction of the liars and their vices, seemingly unparalleled elsewhere in the Noble Quran, reflecting the evil characteristics of the enemies of truth and humanitarian values. Such people who try to deceive the Prophet through offers of wealth and women, if he stopped preaching the message of Islam, were liars, backbiters, scandalmongers, sinful transgressors, preventers of all good things, heartlessly cruel, and moreover, base-born, that is, illegitimate by birth. This is evident at the end of Ayah 13 by the Arabic word zanim, which means son of an adulteress, which is a clear reference to Walid, who was actually conceived through illicit relations with a slave and was not the son of Mughira, the husband of his mother. These ayahs teach us that, number one, we should not be deceived by the promises and oaths of the sworn enemies of Islam and humanity, and should avoid compromise with them. And number two, faith in Allah, sublime values, humanitarian principles, and the peerless personality of the Prophet and his immaculate Ahlul Bayt are immunity for believers against being misled to follow the path of heathens, hypocrites, and evil persons, even if they pretend to have changed the ways. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here are ayahs 14, 15 and 16 of Surah Qalam.
أن كان ذا مال وبنين إذا تتلى عليه آياتنا قال أساطير الأولين سنسمه على الخرطوم.
Only because he has wealth and children, when our signs are recited to him, he says, Myths of the ancients. Soon we shall brand him on the snout. These ayahs refer to one of the root causes of adamancy and rejection of the manifest truth. Hence, the warning to the believers from being influenced by the deviants who possess wealth, tribal prestige, political positions, big families, powerful connections, and the like, which they use to attract followers and mislead people from the path of truth. The Prophet of Islam and his loyal followers were never deceived by such persons, whose arrogance and satanic inclinations make them mock at the Noble Quran as the myths of the ancients, whereas the divine revelation is not just flawless eloquence, but timeless wisdom for those who use their intellect to discern truth from falsehood. Ayah 16 indicates divine wrath reserved for such devilish disbelievers, saying soon they shall be branded on the snout. Such eloquent expression reflects the utmost disgrace of the enemies of truth, in view of the fact the Arabic word Khartoum implies a reference to not just elephants, but to pigs, whose ugly, protruding noses that hide the mouth are unlike that of other mammals. History bears witness to the miserable fate of the obdurate enemies of Islam, who were so disgraced that their humiliation was unparalleled, while more severe torment awaits them on resurrection and the Day of Judgment. From these ayahs, we learn the following points. Number one, arrogance on the basis of wealth and power leads to denial of religion and truth. And that is the reason the rich and the politically powerful were always the arch enemies of the prophets of God. And number two, in spite of the plots and conspiracies of the enemies to disintegrate the heavenly scripture, these opponents of truth and realities will end up in utter disgrace, since the Almighty Creator has promised that Islam will eventually prevail over all creeds and schools of thought.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mir Bagheri. Stay tuned.
اگر کسی خواهد با پیامبر گرامی مرتبط باشه از طریق این دوتا رشته میتونه به پیغمبر متصل بشود.
If someone is interested in finding proximity to Prophet Muhammad, the only way is through the Holy Quran and the Ahlul Bayt. Also, if someone wants to reach the deep meaning of the Quran, the best way is to be familiar with Ahlul Bayt. As Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam stated, the reality of the Quran is in the hearts of the Imams and not between two covers of the Quran. In better words, the heart and soul of the Imams are the best place to keep the reality of the Quran. So the best way to understand the reality of the Quran and to reach the light of Allah is Ahlul Bayt.
شاید معنی این بیان نورانی امام رضا کلمت لا اله الا الله حسنه، هر کی وارد وادی توحید شد در امانه.
Imam Reza alayhi salam in a famous hadith states, "There is no Lord but Allah in my stronghold. Thus, whomever enters my stronghold shall be safe from my punishment. But of course, it has conditions, and I am one of its conditions." In other words, the blessing by which Allah saves humans from punishment is the presence of Ahlul Bayt, since they are the best way to the divine light of Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRive English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mir Bagheri. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC.
Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
In the United States, the Supreme Court has allowed the Biden administration's restrictions on ghost guns. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The Supreme Court on Tuesday, 8th of August, paused a lower court decision that invalidated the Biden administration's efforts to regulate so-called ghost guns, allowing enforcement of the restrictions while legal proceedings continue. The 5-4 order from the Supreme Court came hours before a temporary pause issued by Justice Samuel Alito, who handles requests for emergency relief arising from states including Texas, was set to expire. Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Amy Coney Barrett joined with the three liberal justices to freeze the lower court's ruling, while Justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh said they would deny the request from the Biden administration to revive the rules. The White House commended the Supreme Court's decision to temporarily pause the lower court orders blocking its efforts aimed at curbing gun violence. While this case is being litigated, the Supreme Court's action will keep in place important efforts to combat the surge of unserialized, privately made ghost guns, which have proliferated in crime scenes across the country. Olivia Dalton, the White House Principal Deputy Press Secretary, said in a statement, "The legal battle arrived at the Supreme Court late last month when the Biden administration asked the High Court to reinstate the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives regulation targeting ghost guns while proceedings continue in the lower courts of law. The measure from ATF, the Bureau for Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, which took effect in August of 2022, updated the rules regarding the definition of a firearm under the Gun Control Act to address the proliferation of ghost guns, which are untraceable firearms that can be made from kits available online and assembled at home. The rule defined firearm to include ghost gun kits and clarified the definition of frames or receivers, which are also sold in kits. Under the law, manufacturers and sellers of certain kits are required to obtain licenses, mark their products with serial numbers, conduct background checks and maintain records to allow law enforcement to trace the firearms when used in crimes. The rule does not prohibit the purchase, sale, or possession of any gun, nor does it bar a person legally allowed to have a firearm from making one at home. A group of gun owners, advocacy groups, and entities that make or sell products covered by the rule challenged portions of ATF's restrictions last year, arguing they are unlawful. A federal district court first blocked the challenge provisions prohibiting the Biden administration from enforcing them. Then, on 5th of July, U.S. District Court Judge Reed O'Connor ruled in favor of the plaintiffs and blocked the regulation nationwide, finding ATF acted beyond the scope of its statutory authority. The Biden administration asked the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit to halt the lower court's decision, and the appeals court declined to do so regarding two challenge portions of ATF's restrictions. The Fifth Circuit expedited the Biden administration's appeal and is set to hear arguments in September. In addition to asking the Supreme Court to put district court's order on hold, the Biden administration argued that under a stay, the challengers would be free to make, sell and buy weapons, part kits, and only would need to comply with federal requirements that apply to commercial sales of other firearms. The district court's universal vacator is irreparably harming the public and the government by reopening the floodgates to the tide of untraceable ghost guns flowing into our nation's communities. The Solicitor General, Elizabeth Preloga, wrote in an emergency application to the court. Preloga added, "Once those guns are sold, the damage is done. Some will already be in the hands of criminals and others prohibited persons. And when they are inevitably used in crimes, they are untraceable." But the plaintiffs challenging ATF's rule argued that by defining frame or receiver and firearm under federal law, the agency overstepped its authority under the Gun Control Act. By seeking to bring within its purview items that facilitate the making of firearms by private citizens for their own use, ATF has sought to fundamentally alter the policy choices made by Congress in 1968, one group of gun owners and retailers told the court. "Those policy choices are for Congress to make and not for ATF to make." CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story. The Supreme Court on Tuesday, 8th of August, agreed to freeze a lower court's order that bars the government from regulating so-called ghost guns. These are untraceable homemade weapons as firearms under federal law. The brief order grants the Biden administration's request to allow the regulations to remain in effect while legal challenges play out in the courts of law. Ghost guns are kits that a user can buy online to assemble a fully functional firearm at home. They have no serial numbers, do not require background checks, and provide no transfer records for easy traceability. Critics say they're attractive to people who are legally prohibited from buying firearms. The vote was 5-4. Chief Justice John Roberts and fellow Conservative Justice Amy Coney Barrett joined with the court's three liberal judges to allow the rule to take effect. Justices Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh would have denied the application. In 2022, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, ATF, updated its regulations to define the kits as firearms under the law so that the government could more carefully track them. The rule does not prohibit the sale of possession of any ghost gun kit, nor does it block an individual from purchasing such a kit. Instead, it requires compliance with federal laws that impose conditions on the commercial sale of firearms. Those conditions include requirements that commercial manufacturers and sellers mark products with serial numbers and keep records to allow law enforcement to trace firearms used in crimes. In late June, Judge Reed O'Connor of the United States District Court for the Northern District of Texas held that the agency had exceeded its authority in promulgating the rule and blocked it nationwide. A federal appeals court declined to put on hold two key challenge provisions of the regulation. In the emergency filing with the Supreme Court, Solicitor General Elizabeth Preloga warned the justices that over the last several years, police departments around the nation have confronted an explosion of crimes involving ghost guns. Congress recognized that limiting the federal firearms laws to functional firearms would invite evasion, and it thus broadly defined firearm to include any weapon that will or is designed to or may readily be converted to expel a projectile by the action of an explosive, Elizabeth Preloga wrote. The challenge to the ATF regulations was brought by two Texas residents who own components that they intend to manufacture into ghost guns for their personal use. The rule blocks them from being able to directly purchase additional parts. A handful of retailers of ghost gun kits, as well as a gun rights group, also challenged the rule.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very informative and interesting hadith which has been narrated and transmitted from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. This hadith is about overeating and why it's bad. As you know, Islam is a complete way of life. It has rules for everything, all the way from how we are supposed to, in fact, even use the washroom, all the way up to how we are supposed to run a government. There's nothing, no aspect of human existence and, you know, our lives, which Islam has not stipulated some rules and regulations for. And this is one of the, beauties of Islam and why, a lot of people are attracted to it. So in this hadith, we see that the Prophet Muhammad, he mentions something regarding overeating. As you know, Islam has certain rules and regulations for eating and drinking. For example, there are certain things that we are prohibited from eating. There are certain things which we are prohibited from drinking. Like, by way of example, the consumption of alcohol and other intoxicants. This is something prohibited in Islam. Similarly, there are certain animals which we are prohibited from eating. For example, a very glaring example is pork or the flesh of pigs, and also other animals. These are certain things that we are prohibited from eating. There are certain things which are recommended, highly recommended to be eaten. Like, for example, by way of example, eating a pomegranate, on Thursday is one of the sunan of the Prophet. It's something highly recommended. But in general terms, one of the norms that have been mentioned regarding eating in Islam is that it's considered bad to overeat or eat excessively. In this hadith, the Prophet, he explains this and he says that be warned against excessive food, for it poisons the heart, with hardness, slows the limbs in performing acts of obedience, and blocks the soul from hearing counsel. So the Prophet mentions three bad effects of eating excessively and overeating. The first is that it poisons the heart with hardness, meaning it makes the heart hard. By this, it means that the heart of the human being, it loses its subtlety, and it kind of becomes incapable of feeling, feeling sad or feeling, and it loses the emotion, and it loses its pliant nature. The second effect mentioned is that it slows the limbs in performing acts of obedience, meaning a person becomes lazy as far as performance of acts of worship and ibadat are concerned. And finally, the last effect that the Prophet mentions is that it blocks the souls from hearing counsel. If somebody gives you good advice, a person who overeats, right, he doesn't want to hear any of the advice of others, the counsel of others, right? He doesn't accept it. And, he tries to act independently in when he makes decisions. These are some of the bad effects of eating excessively and why we have been prohibited from doing so. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at eating excessively and overeating in the words of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
This one lay. Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.